you know, Israel is a far, far from perfect country. Why should Christians really care about Israel today?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday here on The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. If you have a Jewish-related question, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. In particular, questions about Israel today, and Israel and the Palestinians, and justice and equity. Love to talk with you. I've got a very special guest in studio with me today, Jonathan Feldstein, and we'll introduce him in a moment, but just want to give you a quick word. If you're used to watching us on YouTube and instead you're watching us on our Facebook page, on Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook, wondering why we have been temporarily banned from live streaming on YouTube, well, to my absolute shock, last night I was informed by YouTube that our video exposing the vile anti-Semitism and hate speech of Rick Wiles and True News, that our video fairly and rightly exposing that and playing clips from that, one that has been getting attacked by anti-Semites left and right, day and night, that we were now penalized for exposing hate speech. We are now guilty of hate speech. So in other words, the hateful anti-Semitic videos can stay on YouTube, no problem. But when we confront and expose them, we're somehow guilty of hate speech. So the video was removed, the first in over 1,800 videos we've posted that was removed. We had one ban, now removed, and both of them exposing anti-Semitism. Shocking enough. So those, one ban, now removed, but this is the first time we have a strike against us, which means we cannot live stream for a week. So we've appealed to that, and beyond that, we've appealed to God and say, God, turn this around for good. Let this be a Book of Esther type situation where that which is meant for evil turns around for greater good. If you have a question, 866-34-TRUTH. All right, what a delight and joy to sit again with Jonathan. He does such important work in Israel, such important humanitarian work. When I found out he was going to be in Charlotte, we said, absolutely, we've got to get together. So, Jonathan, welcome back to The Line of Fire.
It's amazing to be here again. Thank you, Michael.
My joy to be here with you. And just tell our guys, I did not hear Jonathan. Okay, great. We're good. All right. So Jonathan, for those who don't know you, your work, first, tell us who you are personally, your background, and what brings you after these years to be living in Israel.
Well, the last part brings me back to living in Israel is that since I was a teenager, I've wanted to be there. My father was Israeli born. He was, if you will, one of the original Palestinians, as termed by the British, and he gave me a name that he could never pronounce because he always had an accent. So he called me Jonathan, and whether he was telling me to do my homework or rake the leaves or take out the garbage or whatever it was, there was always an Israeli inflection which connected me deeply to the land and the people. And since I was a kid, I wanted to live there. And actually, next month will be the 15th anniversary of our making Aliyah, which has been amazing. Now all of my kids have spent most of their life, and we have a 14-year-old who was born in Jerusalem. We're just waiting on the U.S. to catch up and put Jerusalem, Israel, in his passport because it still says Jerusalem. And born here in America, Orthodox Jew, father of six, son-in-law with a son-in-law and a grandchild, and we're really living the Jewish dream. We moved back to Israel to be able to be on the front lines, to not be watching from the bleachers, but be active in the game, living out Jewish history, living out the promise that God gave us to be there in Israel. And through my life and career, what brings me back to Charlotte area in the U.S. so frequently now is the ways in which we are working together to connect Christians with Israel and Jews and Christians together in ways that are really meaningful and unique.
Mm. And did you grow up speaking Hebrew at all, or you had to learn it later?
My kids will remind me I'm still not fluent. My father, unfortunately, I think his leaving Israel was a trauma, and he really didn't speak to me in Hebrew so much. So I have a foundation, but definitely, and some words that probably are not for on air, although it's in Hebrew. I definitely did not grow up speaking Hebrew.
Got it. All right. So Jonathan, what makes your heart beat? You talk about being on the front lines, living out Jewish history. Here as an Orthodox Jew, friendly with someone like me as a Messianic Jew, working closely with other Christians. What makes your heart beat? Who are you in terms of what God's called you to do and what you sense your purpose is here in life?
Well, first and foremost, what makes my heart beat and what I live for is my family. What a blessing it's to have six kids and see them all as adults and young adults and how they've grown and matured and how Israel is a part of them. And unlike myself growing up in New Jersey, when I would go on school trips or youth group trips and we would go to places that George Washington slept and Thomas Edison invented stuff, they're going and studying exploring the nooks and crannies of Jerusalem and the Galilee.
A little bit older than American history.
A little bit older. And honestly, I mean, not to diminish the light bulb, but it's a little more significant. And that's the most important thing in my life, my family. But what drives me in what I do in most of my waking hours is my work with Christians. And so a year ago, I did the most bold and exciting thing I've ever done in my life. Left a job, started a new nonprofit here in the States called the Genesis 123 Foundation. And if we were having this conversation 10 hours from now, I wouldn't sleep because of how excited I get about the ways to create new and meaningful ways of interaction. One of the things, and I think we've spoken about it before, that I get really bothered by, and it's not just Jews, but I'm an Orthodox Jew, and it's my place to call out Jews and Israelis who do what I call viewing Christians as a faith-based ATM. I reject that. That's horrible. It's just a way how to get money out. It's not a relational kind of experience. It's objectifying Christians and, frankly, taking advantage of Christians. And there are many, many people who do that, Jews and Christians. And I know it. I see it. I watch Christian TV. I listen to the radio. I get emails all the time. And my purpose is to create new and meaningful interactive ways of engaging Jews and Christians together and having so much building on what we have in common, because ultimately I believe it's sanctifying God.
Mm. And the work you did before this, heavily humanitarian, we working with ambulances that were rushing to the front lines of terrorism and other life and death situations. So just so folks know what you were doing before and where your heart beat, because it was the ultimate non-political
Correct.
Type of thing to do. It was caring for hurting human beings on the ground. So I know that's not what you're currently focused on, but what were you doing before this?
Exactly that I represented an organization that was responsible for ambulances and blood in Israel. And that, again, provided tremendous opportunities to connect Jews and Israel, as you said, not in a political, in the most basic humanitarian way. And regardless of one's religion or ethnicity, in the land, throughout the land, you're a citizen, you're not a citizen. When I speak of non-citizens, I speak of Palestinian Arabs who benefited from all of that. And that was a wonderful, wonderful thing and very meaningful to do. But I've graduated. I'm in a much better, more significant place.
All right. So let's start with something really simple. Folks that are familiar with this broadcast have heard me talk about this many a time. But why should Christians care about modern Israel today? I'll play the devil's advocate and say, look, it is largely a secular state, you know, maybe 70% of the people being non-religious, and it's, you know, famous for gay pride and all the, you know, and it's Tel Aviv is worldly like any other city. And then the very Orthodox, they don't believe in Jesus and reject our message. And, you know, and Israel's like an apartheid state today. You know, you hear all these things day and night. So set the record straight. Why should Christians care about Israel and say, hey, we want to work together. We want to be friends. We want to deepen relationships. Why should that matter to your average Christian?
You're asking me as an Orthodox Jew to tell a Christian why he or she should
yes.
be involved. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I think the basic answer, and it comes really down to this, there's a lot more that we can dig down deeper, is that there's very little, if anything else, that's biblical that proves God's promise is real. Mm. He's restored. It's unthinkable mathematically to imagine the Jewish people after thousands of years in diaspora being restored to their land. And it's only because God's given us that ability. Numerically, it's not possible. Over the centuries, it wouldn't be possible. And I live there, and I see in everything that's around me God's fingerprints on everything.
Mm.
You think of the biblical and historical sites, but specifically involved with what I'm doing right now to bring people to participate in a race, a run, or walk in Jerusalem. I talk about the potholes in the streets of Jerusalem being God's fingerprint. It's not just about the old city, but God promised that He would restore us to our land, and that includes all of the modern uncomfortable wrinkles that we as human beings, regardless of our faith, have had. And you know this, the Jewish people weren't always so righteous in Egypt and before going to Egypt and in leaving Egypt, and many of the Jewish people didn't make it because of God's decisions, who was worthy then. He's brought us back, and we have our I think our one-on-one relationship with God that we each need to be working out. But the modern state of Israel is that biblical fulfillment of God's promise. And anyone who's Christian, who understands their Bible and the seriousness with which God makes promises, shouldn't be a question.
Yeah, and I've said to people, why do you have a problem with God being faithful? Why do you have a problem with God keeping His word? In fact, it should encourage Christians.
Yes.
Because Christians are not so perfect either. And if God could keep His promises to Israel despite Israel's failings, He can keep His promises to Christians,
right,
despite Christians' failings. And you're right. When God brought our people into the land out of Egypt, we weren't perfect. When He brought us back from Babylonian exile, we weren't perfect. And He said, I'm doing this for My name's sake. So it's because of His faithfulness and His goodness we stand, not because of ours. Right, we've got a minute before our first break here. What's this race? Tell us about this.
Run for Zion, runforzion.com. We're the first people to organize a Christian experience around the Jerusalem Marathon. It can be for runners. It can be for walkers. There's a 5 and 10K. There's a full and half marathon. We're bringing hundreds of people and building around that Friday morning race through Jerusalem a Christian pilgrimage and service experience. And I'll tell you more about it after the break if you want.
All right, so give us the website again.
Runforzion.com.
All right, and when is the next event?
March 18th to 22nd, 2020.
Oh, all right. Amazing. So all you runners out there, then we'll find out how it benefits Israel and what the blessing is. But I'll tell you this real quick. Folks were pushing me for years to do tours of Israel. I said, I don't want to go there. If I go to Israel, I want to get with my Messianic Jewish friends and teach or have dialogue with rabbis, whatever. I finally got persuaded to do it, and we've done three so far, and every time I'm shocked by how transforming the trip is and how people are impacted. And it's not a political thing. It's the land. It's the history. It's the reality. All right, I'll be right back with Jonathan Feldstein. Runforzion.com. Check it out during the break.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Queen Jezebel was an incredibly evil and demonically controlled woman. She lived 3,000 years ago. But that same demonic power that operated through her back then, that spirit of Jezebel, is at work in America today. One thing that happens with a radical, extreme feminist spirit like the spirit of Jezebel, it wants to make men into women and women into men. It declares in that sense a war on gender. And boy, are we seeing that today, from little children in schools being told that maybe they're boys and girls' bodies or girls and boys' bodies, for an attack just on sexual differences, for an attack on gender distinctions. It's an all-out war on gender. And it's trying to impose on people things that they are not. It's the spirit of Jezebel. That same demonic attack, it's not just natural, it's spiritual. This is Dr. Michael Brown. To get your copy of my new book, Jezebel's War with America, go to JezebelsWarWithAmerica.com. All right, friends, welcome back to the Line of Fire broadcast. You normally hear the Jewish music on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but we wanted to share that news with you about the Jezebel book that will be out in a few weeks. I'm sitting here with Jonathan Feldstein, and what I love when I see somebody doing something they have a burden about, they're not professionals. It's not you turn it on. Okay, now we need you to do an ad. He's sitting here in between during the breaks talking about this keeps him up at night, how excited that he is. So I said right before the break that I've, as much as I knew that these tours to Israel would impact people, ours is, next one is May 2020, as much as I knew how impacting they would be, each time we do it, I'm still shocked to see the impact as people walk the streets of Jerusalem or walk the streets of Galilee or get out on a boat in the Sea of Galilee or visit the Holocaust Museum or go to Masada. I'm amazed by how Christians are impacted by being there. And again, it's not a political tour. In fact, there's almost nothing political I'd said. It's more about the land of the Bible and what God is doing and the fact that history is going to come to its climax right there. It's past, it's present, it's future. But this that Jonathan is doing is absolutely different than anything I've ever heard. And look, I sent him my book, Real Kosher Jesus. He read it and sent back, you know, what he differed with and where he had issues. So, I mean, we'll have candid conversations about our differences. It's not a matter of putting those aside. It's a matter of saying, what about common ground that is sacred to us? So, Jonathan, tell us more about Run for Zion, what happens, what you're doing, and then what you started telling me during the break about something pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah. So, again, God, it's a long story, but God in the late 80s called me to be a bridge between Jews and Christians, probably the first time that I was ever in a church in my life. Representing the state of Israel, sitting in a church in Cleveland, Tennessee, and watching Christians singing Israeli songs, dancing Israeli folk dances, and wearing blue and white. And I didn't understand why. Fast forward to whatever year we're in now or a couple of years ago, and it's been – use the word burden, and that's a negative word, but it's appropriate. It's been a burden on me. It's been a calling to build bridges and make meaningful relationships, not about the ATM, not about cash and getting money, because everyone wants that, and there are many, many good reasons to support Israel and bless Israel financially. So a couple of years ago, I had this great vision that we have this annual marathon that takes place in Jerusalem. About last year, about 40,000 people participated. And
what's the route? And is there a lot of are there a lot of hills involved?
It's very hilly. It's complicated. If you're a runner, which I'm not, by the way, full disclosure, I do not run. But if you're a runner, you do not go to Jerusalem for your best time. It takes a while. In fact, I'm having Shabbat. Why don't you join us Shabbat tomorrow, Saturday, with the pastor who ran the full marathon and is now bringing a team from his church here in Charlotte. Yeah, Pastor Ray Hardy. He just called me a minute ago. I said, can't talk now.
Wow.
He's 61, I think. He ran the full marathon in a little over 5 hours. He hadn't been to Israel since he was 12. So basically, he hadn't been to Israel. And I don't want to give away the climactic moment yet about what the best part of it is. But for me, and it's so crazy to say it, but for me as an Orthodox Jew, to be building bridges, you know this. I spoke at the Billy Graham Library a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I'm going out to all these conventions and speaking in churches. And I love it. I think it's so important and so fascinating for me to have that opportunity, yet it's no less a privilege. And for me now to be in a position where I can offer Christians an opportunity to come to Israel and connect meaningfully, not through the windows of a tour bus, but on the ground, in the land, with the people, doing service projects that we're actually funding. You see, it's very normal. People hear the word marathon and a non-runner will get a little pushed back by that. Oh, I don't run. Well, great. Come and walk with us or come and sit with me and be in the cheering section. We're going to have a couple of spots outside the Jaffa Gate at the end of the race where we can look for people wearing our blue shirts and cheering them on and also being inspired by them and the thousands of other people who participate. But what I'm creating, what we've created, is a Christian experience. So for instance, on Thursday night, the night before the marathon, it's customary, you know, you eat a high-carb pasta meal in order to have the physical energy. But we've transformed that. We do the pasta because that's important, but we're transforming that into a spiritual experience. What does it mean to you as a Christian tomorrow morning to be waking up really early and walking to the start line of a full or half marathon and a little bit later the 5 and 10K? What does it mean for you as a Christian to be walking or running through the city of Jerusalem? Do you see God's fingerprints all over the place? And Shabbat, we do a traditional Shabbat dinner in the hotel that I host as if it were in my home. And Sunday, we do a worship together, which is dangerous territory for me as an Orthodox Jew, because I know that there's so many different traditions and denominations, and I feel like I'm in a minefield, that I'm going to step on a mine and blow off a foot or something. But it's all with really good spirit and good intention. So we're bringing people, and that alone, and you know the word Dayenu, I'm good with that. I can rest my hat on that. But that we also offer people the opportunity, as any marathon or 10K race would, to have their friends and family sponsor them to go toward projects. Well, our projects are a basket of things that are programmatically and fiscally viable, that have real strong integrity in what they do, and that are or should be important to Christians. I don't want to just give money to somebody who wants money. There are a handful of things that we're doing that are relevant, and we're supporting those. So the money that people bring in, the collective from all of it, and if we have 400 people next year, we have the potential to bring in $1 million. That's really exciting, because that's transforming. It's blessing Israel in a very big way. But then the biggest piece of all of it, and I look at this, my father was a chemist. So I look, even though he, and that Israeli Jew, that accent, he's always speaking in my head. I look at life a lot of times as a formula. And what's one of the best formulas in the Bible? God says, I will bless those who bless you. He doesn't say, bless Israel, I am the Lord your God, period. He says, bless Israel and I will bless you. We could go on for days talking about how he does or can bless us. But then Jonathan, the Orthodox Jew from Israel, comes along and says, great, I got one. Raise $3,200 through your personal crowdfunding page, and we're going to give you the land package for free. So it's been your dream to come to Israel? Ask 100 people to give you $32, and you're there. We give you the land package. Raise $5,500, and we're giving you land plus up to $1,400 for airfare. So from most places in the world in the month of March, you can fly to Israel for under $1,400, and therefore you have a free trip. And you are not only going there and receiving that blessing, but you're actually participating physically in blessing Israel, as Christians would say, as a missions trip. It really is, because we're hands-on with the programs that we're funding. I understood that was important from a matter of integrity, but it was so much more important from our participants, because it added dimension to that really meaningful experience they were already having.
Mm. A whole lot there, friends. Runforzion.com. And then that's March. If you're unable to go in March, our trip in May. And we also, it's so important to connect with people on the ground and get involved with humanitarian work on the ground. That's something important to us as well. You know, Jonathan, our last tour, I'm every night I do something with the tour group, have meals together, and then I'm at different sites during the week doing special teaching and things like that, because we have a tour guide, you know, going, and they know the archaeology and history better than I do. So I'll do teaching in select places. So we were all at the Kotel, and I said, okay, the Western Wall, I said, I'm going to head back to the hotel. And it was February. It was a little cold and rainy. And they said, you're going to take a taxi? I said, no, I'm going to walk. So I got my GPS. And of course, my GPS is trying to say all the Hebrew names in English. And I just followed it walking. So it was, but it took me 45 minutes at a healthy pace, but it was uphill the entire way. But I loved every second of it. I loved the walk and being there, and just as I'm sure living there, the mystique, the wonder of it doesn't go away. So just a minute before the break, what happens to participants? How are they impacted?
Well, I would ask people to watch the video. We have it on our homepage, runforzion.com, because there you'll see the testimonies of the people who have participated so far. Many of the people were in Israel for the first time, and some of those were apologetic. They said, we have this opportunity. We can come to Israel anytime. It's just a matter of buying a plane ticket. And one guy was in the service in Turkey and never made it just from Turkey to Israel. And being there with us this past March, he felt guilty, apologetic, that no one had ever made this a bigger priority on his life. We had a woman come from Alabama, 46-year-old single woman, came by herself, furthest from home she had ever been was Mexico. and this was transforming for her. And we're not doing a first-timers trip. It's a more of an upper level, 400 level class. And it was amazing because people just got to experience multiple dimensions rather than just the tourism. But we were inviting people, encourage people, and we're bringing churches and other ministries in as partners to promote it with us and bring their own teams.
All right, friends, runforzion.com. Hey, do you have a question about Israel today or just a Jewish-related question? Hebrew question like we always do on Thursdays, 866-348-7884. Your Jewish-related questions. Welcome today.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown sitting with my friend Jonathan Feldstein. He's an Orthodox Jew. Lives in Israel, lives in Judea Samaria, which is called the West Bank. He knows things from the inside in that regard. And if you missed the first half of the broadcast, go to runforzion.com. If you're just tuning in and you're wondering, those of you that normally watch on YouTube, why we sent you over to Facebook, we have been banned from doing any live streaming on YouTube for 1 week as a penalty for exposing the vile hate speech and anti-Semitism of True News. We exposed hate speech and got penalized for hate speech. So we've appealed immediately and told them, you got the wrong guys. We're the ones exposing the hate speech here. We're the ones speaking against those words that can lead to hatred of Jews and violence against Jews. We're the good guys here. But we have committed this to God in prayer. And whatever YouTube does, if they recognize their error and take away the strike against us and open up the doors freely, then we'll rejoice in that. If they go through with their disciplinary measure, then I'm going to believe God's going to use that to get the message out all the more loudly. So sitting with Jonathan Feldstein, Jonathan, you know that over the years, there has been a history, an ugly history of professing Christians persecuting Jews. You also know that there is a very deep and wonderful love for Israel and the Jewish people among many Christians, especially evangelicals. I've run into it literally around the world for 47 years. So yes, I know that there is a very ugly, quote, Christian anti-Semitism. But what blesses me is to see the heart of God expressed in Christians who really love Israel and the Jewish people. There are a lot of objections that are raised. We're often told that Israel is an apartheid state or Israel is genocidal and it's not right for a Christian to stand with Israel. So you live in what's called the West Bank. Talk about life on the ground. Talk about the reality of Jews and the Arabs, Palestinians living there. Israel's heart for justice, where Israel falls short. Just be candid. Talk to us as someone that lives there and someone that cares about people.
Yeah, so where we live, it's just across the valley from Bethlehem. And I hear and see Bethlehem out the front of my house. And it's important because I'm hearing the call to prayer, the Islamic call to prayer, when the wind blows in the right direction five mm-hmm. times a day. And conversely, I'm hearing church bells twice a day. And every time I hear the church bells, I always pray that I'll hear them the next day because life for Christians among the Palestinian Authority, which currently controls Bethlehem and other cities throughout the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, isn't so easy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's real important. And it's important for us as Jews.
So it's not the Israelis that are restricting and persecuting Christians living in Bethlehem and things like that?
No. Israel has no responsibility for Bethlehem. That's part of Area C,
mm-hmm.
Area A, that we withdrew from, according to the Oslo Accords, more than almost 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Area A is under full Palestinian Authority control. And that includes Bethlehem, it includes Ramallah, it includes Hebron, most of Hebron. It includes most of the major Arab cities throughout Judea and Samaria, West Bank, however, whatever you want to call it. And there's been a mass exodus. There's been a transformation in terms of the demographics. Bethlehem, of all places in the world, used to be 80, 90% Christian. Today it's the opposite. Today it's 10 or 20% Christian. And I feel for that. I have a friend who's a pastor there. I went there when I was a kid, but I haven't been back because there's a big red sign as you approach area A that it's illegal for Israelis to go into these areas. So it's not worth it for me. As much as I want to stand in solidarity with him, and as much as I'm curious about my neighbors, and I don't have anything hateful, and I think honestly most of my neighbors who they can't see the air quotes on radio, but people call us settlers, and settlers comes along with a pejorative label as if we're hateful, or we're taking over Palestinian Arab land, that we're burning down their fields, or whatever it may be. I actually find quite the opposite. I think most of my friends and neighbors who are right of center Orthodox Israeli Jews have a much higher level of respect for our Palestinian Arab neighbors. We work together. We shop together. Come into a grocery store in Gush Etzion, where I live, during Ramadan in the late afternoon, and you'll see this fabulous mix of Arab and Israeli Israeli Jews and Arab Palestinians working together, shopping together, coexisting, being polite. We share the roads. A lot of people in my town prefer to go to the hardware store that's just outside of town because you get better prices and better service from the Palestinian Arabs. All of the businesses in that area, the Arab businesses, market in Hebrew because they know that they're integrally related with us financially. And they shouldn't be dependent upon us, but we use that as a foundation, I think, for civil getting along. Do they all love us? No. Do some of them believe that we have no right to be there and that those who built our houses eventually think that they're going to come and take over our houses? Maybe. But I'm friendly with a guy, Omar, who was the contractor who supervised the building of our house 15 years ago. And I believe that he's a father of five. I'm a father of six. We're more or less the same age. We have the same desire in life to get along, to live peacefully, to earn a living and put food on the table for our families.
Are there some settlers that are right-wing extremists that give other settlers a bad name, or is that a myth?
Well, they wouldn't think that they give us a bad name, but I believe so. Yes, of course there are. Absolutely there are. And there are people who are intolerant, who believe as much as the Arab extremists believe that we have no place there, that the Arabs have no place there. And we can do a whole two-hour show just on the derivation of the Palestinian Arabs, those who call themselves Palestinians now, and where they came from and how they got there. And some are indigenous and some are immigrants and descendants of immigrants. I used to work for one. Whose family seven generations ago came from Egypt, but he happens to be an Israeli and a proud Israeli. There's any number of people who don't get along and don't trust one another and don't like one another and would rather see the others go. But we're there, and short of a God thing that neither you or I can project today, I mean, we know ultimately, but what's going to happen today, tomorrow, next week? We're there to coexist. And will there ever be peace as in a Western form? I don't know. I'm not holding my breath on that. And that's especially powerful considering my oldest son is going into the paratroopers next month.
Mm. Right. That's real life there by necessity. If you've got a Jewish or Israel-related question, especially something that Jonathan can answer, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Jonathan, one state solution, is it possible? Is it feasible? I mean, you hear the problems with a two-state solution. Carolyn Glick's articulated that. Others have raised questions about it. Then you talk about one-state solution. How does it work out demographically? Could you maintain a Jewish state? Would you expect the Arab Palestinians to sing HaTikvah? I mean, there's complications everywhere. And ultimately, I don't believe that total lasting peace really is going to come anywhere in the world until the Messiah returns. In your view, the Messiah comes, obviously. But what's your thought on one state versus two state, if you're just giving a pragmatic opinion?
Pragmatically, I put it in God's hands.
I'm happy with that.
Right? I don't see a one state solution because, frankly, I don't think that Israel's not meant to have – we were restored to the land to be a Jewish country. We can talk about whether in modern days Israel has an obligation to be a democratic Jewish country, but it is. I don't think that we have a need or obligation to absorb another 2 or 3 million Palestinian Arabs as first-class citizens, as second-class citizens in any capacity. I think that Palestinians can be given some form of independence and they should prosper and be well in adjacent communities. They're not leaving anytime soon, nor are we. And our lives are we're kind of tied at the hip. Mm-hmm. A lot of what the
– Some of the Palestinians even go back to being Jews.
That's correct. Right. I would love to do a DNA test and start walking through Palestinian Arab neighborhoods and tell them that they're really Jews. That would be fun. But – I don't see and the failure of the two-state, which is it's two-state is only a pipe dream. Excuse me, a pipe dream because we don't have anyone to make peace with.
I understand.
And so to continue to project this formula that doesn't that has a missing X that you just can't fill. Right, you know what needs to be the outcome.
Right,
but the element is not there, and it for the foreseeable future won't be there.
Hey, we've got Pastor Ray Hardy.
Excellent.
He is on the line. Ray, I'm not sure if you and I have met in all the time I've been in Charlotte, but thanks for calling in, sir. 61
it's
years
my
old.
My pleasure, Michael. Nice to meet you on the phone. No problem.
Yes. Yeah, 61 years old, running a marathon in Jerusalem. That's an accomplishment, man. 5 hours, that's a long time to be moving. How did the trip impact you overall after so many years being outside of Israel to be back in the land? How did it impact you?
Well, I'm only 58, but it felt like I put 3 years on my life.
All right. Blame it on Jonathan. That just made your running more heroic, though, that's all.
That's no problem. So to me, I tell people it was beautiful agony. It was the most beautiful experience that I've had in running, but it was also very agonizing, but especially because it helped me to identify with all that the Jewish people had gone through. Just the way this entire trip was planned was just seamless, and being able to identify with those who'd been to the Holocaust, those who wanted to make Aliyah back into the Promised Land. And so I was a child when I went when I was 12, and now that I'm 58, growing on 61, it was just something that really powerfully touched me in a new kind of way. And to be moving and running in the steps of the Jewish people and the Messiah, and it's a pleasure for me to be able to do this, especially for those people that have made possible to run and make it possible by going to fundraise for this. I just want to thank all those people that helped me to make it possible to be a part of this experience.
Awesome. Hey, listen, that is amazing to hear. And I'm a local Messianic Jew, so you can touch Israel just by being here. We'll have to get together one day, all right?
Absolutely. My parents live not too far from the Messianic Jewish congregation near Valentine. So
okay,
I know
awesome.
Exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, I know the folks there well. All right, God bless. Great talking to you. Thanks for calling in, sir.
God bless you, too, and have a great time with John.
All right. Hey, friends, we come back. Let's talk about the Third Temple. We've got a question there. And is there Jewish expectation about that? Runforzion.com. That's the place to go. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is your Thoroughly Jewish host, Michael Brown. 866-348-7884. Sitting with my thoroughly Jewish guest, Jonathan Feldstein. And listen, we could talk for about a million hours mm-hmm. about the areas we differ on and how we see Jesus, Yeshua, etc. So that maybe we'll have more opportunity to do that in the days ahead. But we are sitting together with our common love for Israel, with our astonishment and wonder at what God has done. It's a God experience. I asked my friend Scott Volk, who's led dozens of tourists to Israel, I said, what's the quickest anybody was ever impacted on a trip. He said the guy got off the plane in Tel Aviv. When he walked off the plane, he started weeping and said, "I'll never be the same." So that was pretty quick. But Jonathan, Neil Armstrong.
Yeah.
50 years ago, we set foot on the moon. Neil Armstrong, of course, being one of our pioneer hero astronauts. But he's got a Jerusalem story.
He has a Jerusalem story. It's really powerful. And 25 years after he was on the moon, he came to Jerusalem for the first time. Mm. And he was asked by his host, who was an archaeologist, to bring him to a place where Jesus walked, where it was certain that Jesus walked. So they went. You've been there, the southern steps of the Temple Mount, all Jewish. Now there's a route. Now we have uncovered the whole road that leads to that point, the Pilgrim's Road, through the city of David. But the southern steps, you can imagine thousands, tens of thousands, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of Jewish pilgrims walking up those steps in sync, going to the temple for the festivals and to bring offerings during the course of the year. So Neil Armstrong sitting there, and he's grilling this guy who's his host. "You're sure Jesus sat here, walked here? You sure he had? I mean, we don't know on that exact stone, but he was there." And his host said, "Yes, yes, he definitely had to." And Neil Armstrong articulated, I don't have the exact words in front of me, but I wrote about it in Town Hall this week. Neil Armstrong said it was more meaningful for him to walk in the footsteps of Jesus than to have been the first man to walk on the moon.
Yeah. In fact, when we were there with our tour group earlier this year, our tour guide sitting on those very steps told that very story. And it's an amazing story. So you've got to get there. March, runforzion.com, or May, askdrbrown.org. Join us in Israel. All right, let's grab another call here. We'll go to Salman in California. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I do have a question about the Third Temple.
Yeah.
Okay, according to conservative Bible teachers throughout the 80s and 90s, I was told of and warned of an Antichrist that will appear in sign peace deals in the Middle East and bring peace to the Middle East. And he will actually oversee the Third Temple being built, and it will prepare the way for the Antichrist. And I understand that Jared Kushner is an architect in these peace deals, and I noticed that his home address is 666 Fifth Avenue, and Trump Tower is there's a temple to the sun god Apollo, and on the 66th floor he has all this stuff glorifying Apollo and the sun god, and he has upside down pyramids on Trump Tower 6x6x6 with 7 obelisks above them. I mean, isn't it like obvious that there's something going on here?
All right. Well, tell you what. And I remember when I was talking to a woman, Christian woman, during the presidency of Ronald Wilson Reagan, and she pointed out to me, Ronald Wilson Reagan, 6 letters in each name, 666. And then, of course, there was Mikhail Gorbachev, and it looked like he was doing all this great good there and bringing down the wall and bringing down communism, the Iron Curtain, but he had the mark of the beast on his forehead. So, Salman, we've heard a lot of this before. I don't want to be disrespectful to you taking this seriously, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to put in my bet today that Jared Kushner is not the Antichrist. I'm going to put in my bet today he's not the Antichrist. But, Jonathan, let me ask you this. Your average Israeli, your average religious Israeli, very religious Israeli, secular Israeli, so all different ones, what do they think? Are they focused on building the Third Temple? Is this more of an issue among some evangelical Christians with their prophecy books than people in Israel, be they secular or religious? What do they think about a Third Temple?
Well, certainly it's a thing on the radar of religious Orthodox Israelis. I don't believe it's on the radar at all of secular Israelis, except to the extent that they sometimes hear rumors of someone wanting to build a temple, and they get all annoyed by that because necessarily it involves taking down a mosque with a golden dome that's up there right now.
Why would your average secular Israeli be annoyed with that?
Because they don't think that we should upset the status quo on the Temple Mount.
Uh-huh.
And yet Orthodox Israelis like myself, we pray regularly for the restoration, for the reappearance of the temple.
But in your mind, is that something that people go about doing, or that this will be part of what the Messiah accomplishes?
Yes is the answer. The answer is yes, but I will give you another answer. I once sat on a plane going home with Rabbi Chaim Richman from the Temple Institute, and we were talking together. We were talking about music, and then I had one of my most brilliant fundraising ideas ever. I said, let's start a $1 billion capital campaign and have the money in the bank to show God that we're ready whenever he gives us that opportunity.
Got it. And look, there were many Orthodox Jews, ultra-Orthodox Jews, that opposed the modern state of Israel and said, this is for Messiah to do, this is political, this is secular, and then you're going to have a secular state, which is the worst thing, and it's going to incite anti-Semitism.
Also.
And then after the Holocaust, many more said, okay, we can see this as being part of the larger redemption. So then, you know, you don't know how the thing will unfold. And obviously, we could have 1,000 discussions about Antichrist and prophecy and different Jewish views, Christian views. We won't do that right now. But I'm just looking at a question from Tracy in Texas. Because time is short, Hebron, what's the situation there? When I was the only pro-Israel speaker at the Christ at the Checkpoint conference last year in Beit Jala and Bethlehem, the first day they took speakers through Hebron to say, look at how terrible this is, look at what Israel's done to us, and so on. Do you have a perspective on Hebron, history there? I know there were violent attacks on Jews back in the 30s in Hebron, but can you give us just a two-minute overview of the situation there?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I wrote about this regarding one of their congresswomen here recently in 1929. There was a massacre. It had nothing to do with occupation. It had nothing to do with the state of Israel. It had nothing to do with Israel being a Zionist entity. That wasn't the case. 67 Jews, if I'm not mistaken, were massacred on one day by their neighbors, Arab neighbors in Hebron. Today, I don't know the exact percent, but the vast majority of the city, something like 80 or 90% of the city, is under Palestinian Authority control. We were talking earlier about Area A, B, and C. That's under Area A. Israel controls a small portion, which is where the minority of maybe 1,000 Jews live, which covers the Tomb of the Patriarchs, which is holy to certainly us as Jews and Muslims as well. They've made a mosque out of a part of that. Have you been there?
Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that how that shrine looks very Islamic, and as they've adopted the patriarchs as some sort of leaders in Islam. It's certainly a place where there's more tension on a daily basis, and sometimes that tension explodes to violence. People who will go out to defame Israel will point at that as to that small portion of the city of Hebron where Palestinian Arabs don't have freedom to pass because there are risks for security among the Jews. But they don't go to the 80% of the rest of the city where there are 200,000 Palestinians who live in. Engage in life on a daily basis with no impediments at all.
Yeah, and we definitely didn't see that part when we were given our tour. Bottom line, though, Jonathan, is that human beings are human beings. And yes, you have dangerous radical Islamic leadership, and yes, you can have dangerous extremism, be it Jewish or Arab. But especially younger people growing up, they would rather just get along.
Yep.
And that's a big part of what you're trying to do is let's just be friends and neighbors.
Yeah, we they're human beings, so they're created in God's image, and we need to coexist. We need to be respectful on a human basis. Can that lead to a peaceful accommodation on a personal basis where the vile things that come out of the Palestinian Authority and some Islamic leaders that Jews – horrific things, and you know what they are about Jews certainly having no right to be there and that we are descendants of apes and pigs and all these other silly things – that they say, I think that these interactions force some people to go home and at least think twice about that, if not speak quietly to their own children. Yeah, you know, I work with Jonathan and his family, and I've been in his home, and they're very lovely and respectful, and don't believe that nonsense that you hear. And hopefully, the message is getting through.
Yeah, and I think because prejudice can be on all sides. That people just get to know other people.
Yes.
And realize, boy, you have the same concern. You're concerned about your kids,
correct,
their future, well-being, living in peace and security. And those are common ideals. And Obviously, we await the final peace that the King of Kings brings, but we do our best to live peacefully and be a blessing and love our neighbor. V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, love your neighbor like yourself. So check out runforzion.com, especially if you are a runner. Sounds like an amazing experience. And Jonathan, hopefully our next trip in Israel, we can hook up and
yes,
introduce our tour group to you as well. All right, friends, 30 minutes from now, I'm going to come back on Facebook, Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook, and do a live Q&A event with you. So we'll be right back in 30 minutes.